From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Maria Zakharova is the spokesperson for Russia's foreign ministry. She does a weekly press conference at her offices in Moscow. Today we bring you some of the discussion from the press conference that she held this past Wednesday, covering some of the more important issues around the globe.
Good afternoon. Excuse me for moving the time for 1 hour later, but the reason behind it is the REACH agenda. I would like to start with the issue that is very interesting for a lot of people around the world. I'm talking about the outbreak of the coronavirus infection. I would like to take note that the Russian president on the 31st of January sent a letter to President Xi with the words of support and sympathy in connection with the outbreak of the coronavirus infection. We have also proposed our help to our Chinese friends. On the 1st of February, Russian foreign minister had a phone talk with his Chinese counterpart, Mr. Wang Yi, when our minister reaffirmed our readiness to help China in controlling the epidemic. At the request of our Prime Minister, Mr. Mishustin, an emergency response team has been created in order to prevent the propagation of the new coronavirus infection. It is being headed by Madam Golikova, Deputy Prime Minister, and our foreign minister, together with other relevant federal executive authorities, work within the framework of this team. We have informed you on the regular basis and in this regard. And the emergency response team has been also created within the Russian MFA. I hope that you receive updates from our foreign missions as well, from our embassies, consulate generals, on this issue. I would like to remind you that we have hotlines that work in an online regime. You can also consult our website, the MFA website, and online resources of our foreign missions. And I would like to draw your attention to the program that you can download on your smartphone, iPad, computer. The app is called the Foreign Aid, where you can receive the necessary updates in an online regime, whether you're abroad or not. So now our country, in close cooperation with Chinese partners, does its best to contain the new coronavirus infection across the Russian Federation. You know that our government has adopted executive orders. I'll not give their numbers. The emergency response team informs you on this information. I would like to say that our consulate generals in China closely follow the situation and remains in contact with the Russian citizens who find themselves in the disease-ridden areas. On the 5th of February, Defense Minister's airplanes evacuated Russian citizens and citizens of a number of CIS countries from the city of Wuhan, Hubei province, to the territory of our country. All our compatriots who wanted to leave the hotbed of the disease were evacuated. In the border regions, the evacuation corridors have been created for the Russian citizens who would like to enter Russia and for Chinese citizens who would like to leave Russia and enter China. In the foreign missions, as I have already stated, there are hotlines for our citizens who live in China and who are now in China, and our citizens can use these channels in order to get in touch with our diplomats and to receive help. On the 9th of February, with the help of our ministry, the AMERCOM special flight brought Russian humanitarian aid to the city of Wuhan. Over 23 tons of different medical personal protective equipment were sent to China. This equipment are in short supply in the affected regions of China. I would also like to do something that I don't usually do. Usually we present political assessments, answer questions, sometimes we are emotional, but I always provide facts in order to support our position. It is very difficult to wait for that others will be conscious on the matter, but I would like to say that I read Western media and I monitored the messages of foreign media. I read numerous articles in the Western media. And I'm really terrified that it is being published on the territory of a state that would like to present themselves as civilized and who promote high ideals of democracies, who uphold human rights on high international platforms. This is outrageous, their outrageous attitudes towards Chinese population and government. They use fakes, hoax news. They do not pay respect and sympathy to a country that desperately needs this sympathy and understanding because they face the propagation of a new coronavirus. It is unprecedented. So we have to remember what these countries have signed, what documents they have signed, and what ideals they are to uphold in different human rights organizations, etc., etc. They must be reminded of these principles, and they must live in accordance with these principles. And if a country, if Chinese country and Chinese people is combating this epidemic, this evil, this challenge, then of course we must be sympathetic with them. And in this regard, I would like to support Chinese people. I would like to support our Chinese friends, not only on my own behalf, but on the behalf of those who are not indifferent, those who live in Russia and who send us letters, who call us, and who would like to transmit the words of support to Chinese population in these very difficult times. And sometimes, and I would like to express this sympathies in Chinese.
We wish China and Chinese people to often look at the pandemic. In this difficult time, Russia and China are together. Russia 祝愿中国人民取得最终的胜利.
You will see the translation in the written form on our website. Let's proceed to the situation in Syria. Lately, the situation in Idlib has become extremely tense. Fighters of terrorist groupings Hayat Takrir al-Sham and its affiliated groupings have increased their attacks against Syrian government forces. They shell nearby cities, including Aleppo. They attacked Russian airbase Hamim using drones. As a result, 150 civilians died, 300 were injured. Over 400 Syrian military were killed, and over 900 soldiers were injured. The reasons behind this situation degradation is because Turkey systematically disregards its commitments under the Sochi Memorandum of the 17th of September 2018. And because Turkey sent squads of the so-called moderate armed opposition to the northeast of Syria in the Peace Spring operation zone and in Libya. Nevertheless, Russia reaffirms its obligations under Astana format on Idlib. We are ready to fully respect them. Our main goal is to reduce violence on the ground to ensure security of the country guarantor's military. that are in the zone and around it, and also to prevent armed confrontation as a result of reckless military acts. We believe that in the near future, Russian and Turkish representatives will continue its work on dealing with Idlib problem. As you know, recently, Russian intergovernmental delegation has visited Ankara. And now we are waiting for a new schedule of regular contacts on the interministerial line, and we will inform you later. We have to highlight that all Syrian de-escalation zones were created as a temporary measure, and they in no way should encroach upon the sovereignty and territorial integrity of the country, and must not impede the combat with terrorists, considered as such by the UN Security Council. The problem of the terrorist presence persists in different regions of Syria, in particular in the northeast of Syria. Despite the US and their allies' declarations saying that they smashed the ISIS, we see the activization of the sleeper cell of the terrorist organization. Fighters regularly attack Kurdish troops, and they try to damage basic infrastructure in other parts of Syria. Thus, on the 27th of January, terrorists attacked separate petroleum storage reservoirs in the port city of Banias. On the 3rd of February, they shelled oil and gas sites in the Homs province. The situation with the IDP's Al-Haul camp is very alarming. There are members of the ISIS fighters' families, foreign terrorists and fighters. The camp is on the bridge of the humanitarian catastrophe. The access there is restricted. In this regard, we would like to say that our country does its best to evacuate children from the camp. From the 1st to the 6th of February on the territory of Syria, the Russian intergovernmental working group came to the territory of Syria and it evacuated 35 Russian children from the Al-Haul camp. On the 6th of February, 27 kids returned to their homes and 9 children stayed in Damascus in order to fill in the necessary papers. Among the destabilizing factors, the Israeli strikes against Syria territory. These unilateral actions violate Syrian sovereignty and put at risk lives and security of civilians. This happened on the 6th of February, when aircraft carrying 172 people on board was almost shut down because of the Israeli Air Force activities. Let's move on to the next topic. Afghanistan and the statements made by the ex-Vice President of the United States, Mr. Biden. We took note of these statements on the Afghanistan. He made the statements during his election campaign. We believe that we will hear a lot of extravagances from the U.S. presidential candidates that is terminating. Mr. Biden, in his statement, was very negative concerning the situation in Afghanistan, and he questions the prospects of Afghanistan regaining its unity and nationality. The Russian side wasn't surprised by this declaration, because the U.S. authorities say that for the last 18 years they have been waging war on terrorism, and they have been creating democratic statehood of Afghanistan.
As we know, neither of these goals would have been achieved by Washington. In this context, we can only perceive these words as a direct confession by the American authorities of his own impotence in those issues and the failure of their Afghan campaign, which Russia has repeatedly stated. We are not talking about a human rights defender, not about a person who represents a humanitarian structure, not about an expert. We are talking about a representative of the higher executive authority in the United States, who for many years had all the leverages to influence the situation, among other things. In this context, we understand the negative reaction towards his statements from Afghan social and political circles, including representatives of the government of Afghanistan, who closely cooperate with the United States. We believe that this once again reaffirms that the United States and their allies have drained their resources in Afghanistan, and now it's time to withdraw the foreign military presence from the country. Afghans should get to the negotiations table and determine the fate of their state, because nobody else could make this decision for them. Ukraine. Today we celebrate the anniversary of the Minsk package of measures. On the eve, we have published our full statement with our evaluations of the situation and the phases of the Minsk agreements and their implementation. I don't know if we could use the word phase in this context. I believe we should use the definition in our statement, or rather imitation of the implementation of the Minsk agreements by the Ukrainian parties. So we have already given all evaluations on the eve of this day, so I would like to directly address the situation in the information space. We are forced to once again address freedom of speech in Ukraine, where the Kyiv regime continues to pursue a target policy meant to strengthen state control over mass media and ramp up pressure on undesirable information sources. We are seriously concerned by the recent legislative initiatives in the media field. The bill entitled Media and Fighting Disinformation, in essence, envisage a number of significant restrictions against mass media, effectively introducing a state censorship over undesirable materials. It is easy to see in these anti-democratic legislative initiatives an exclusively anti-Russian component. In particular, we see another attempt made by the Ukrainian authorities to fully drive out Russian information content and Russian language content and deprive the population of an opportunity to receive unbiased, objective information on events in the country and in the world. Even if we say that some information is not completely impartial, it is not the same as depriving one's own population of alternative sources of information. Judge by yourselves. The bill contains a direct instruction to mass media to cover Russian leadership activities in a negative light. They intend to enshrine in law the ban on popularization and propaganda of the aggressor state authorities. This is a quote. Based on the policy pursued by Kyiv against Donbas, the aggressor state is Ukraine. The most horrifying fact is that Ukraine pursues aggression against its own people, and also a ban on justifying or denying armed aggression and annexation of Ukrainian territory, violation of its territorial integrity and sovereignty. It is obvious that, depending on the interpretation, these restrictions could be applied to any journalist material. They also propose to introduce a norm that would make sure that foreign news agencies would be denied registration if their management structures are located in Russia. Where are the unions which regulate the activity of journalism? Where are the documents which stipulate that? Where are the countries that encourage such a conduct, such behavior? Exactly this behavior is strongly criticized by the professional community, both on a national and on an international level. Ukrainian media market will be closed for companies whose owners or beneficiaries are Russian citizens or tax residents. Rebroadcasting of signals from the Russian territory is forbidden. The official Kyiv shows no leniency to undesirable national mass media either. Last year, the Ukrainian Security Service conducted searches in the 1+1 TV channel office, declaring that criminal persecution in no way could amount to putting pressure on mass media or pressing freedom of speech. Is that a preventive measure? Did they want to check how the security service works? Where are the international structures? Where are those who closely monitor the situation in the field of human rights, rights and freedoms of journalists and mass media? Concerns with the forceful actions against journalists and the latest Ukrainian legislative initiatives have been voiced by the OSCE representative on freedom of the media, Mr. Dazir. There has also been a response from relevant Ukrainian and international NGOs, National Union of Journalists of Ukraine, European Federation of Journalists, Reporters Without Borders. The problem is that these are targeted reactions. They should do it as we know they can. How was the name of the Ukrainian sniper woman? Do you remember her? Savchenko? They can do it. With posters, take to the streets, write petitions, carry out flash mobs, actions, provide photos in support, get food to the office of the TV channel to show support. I know that Ukrainian journalists know how to do that. We know that Ukrainian authorities should heed the opinion of the international community. We hope they will stop their arbitrary actions against mass media and will turn back to the civilized conduct. We once again call upon Kyiv to live up to their international commitments in the field of freedom of speech and the media. In the Baltic countries, we are worried by the deteriorating situation of the Russian and Russian language mass media in these countries. Similar actions are carried out by authorities of different countries against Russian mass media without any grounds other than the politicals, prove that this is a pressure against mass media, that this is an anti-Russian campaign aimed against Russian journalists and mass media. Had there been any evidence, it would have been produced, but there is no evidence. But there are identical political measures of containment and aggression. On February the 4th in Riga, the State Security Service of the country carried out searches on the premises of the Baltic Media Alliance, which includes 25 TV channels in the Baltic countries and which rebroadcast programs of the Russian First Channel and RAN TV. As an official pretext for the raids, Riga cites a suspicion that a certain group of people, including co-owners and board members of the alliance Solodova and Plesunova, in violating the EU sanctions. That way it could be put in a conveyor belt if they use these formulations and these wordings. They could attack any mass media outlet if they make up such pretexts. Amid systematic persecution by Latvian authorities of Russian language information sources, this looks like a frame-up. And such statements by Latvian special services are nothing but an unsuccessful attempt by Riga to justify its discrimination and repressive policy against mass media. And where is everyone? Where are the rallies in front of embassies of the relevant countries, first and foremost Latvia and other countries of the European Union? Where are flash mobs? Where is the support? That Latvia does not intend to review its attitude towards Russian language media sources was further confirmed by the news following the incident that the Administrative District Court of the country had not overlooked the decision of the National Council on Electronic Mass Media on stopping the rebroadcasting of 9 Russian-language channels. Moreover, recently, the Latvian president, Egils Lauvis, addressed the Latvian Sejm Commission on Human Rights and Social Affairs with a proposal to increase the share of TV programs on official languages of the EU in cable networks in the Republic, bringing them up to 80%. What can we say? It's better to stake on the European languages, Spanish, Portuguese. This is very relevant for Latvia. Does no one see that we believe such steps are a direct violation of rights and freedoms of mass media and discrimination against Russian-speaking population who, for political reasons, are denied access to information on the Russian language? We see similar trends in other Baltic countries. Estonian authorities, by putting unprecedented pressure on local Sputnik Estonia office, resorted to threats of criminal persecution against employees of the mass media outlet, forced the news agency to suspend its work, the work of its editorial office, from January 1, 2020. In Lithuania, Sputnik is also under constant pressure. In May 2019, authorities denied entrance and prohibited it to the country for 5 years for the chief editor of the agency, Murat Kasem. I will remind you that last year, in the country, under different pretexts, bans have been introduced against the rebroadcasting of Russian TV channels RTR Planet and Russian 24. We see that this is an obvious Russophobic campaign. The representatives of those beautiful countries make decisions at different levels in the official or social society. In the form of the world, there are segments which are fully dedicated to the problem of freedom of speech, democratic processes, freedom of the media. How do they feel there? Why should they attend such forums if, when they return to their countries? They politically destroy alternative points of view and even mock the rights. I do not like that word, but it exists in the international vocabulary, the rights of national minorities. I truly believe that any people, any nation deserves to have a name, but if there is such a term, the rights of national minorities, then okay. But this is a mocking of their rights. People who were born, who grew up, and who made a lot of effort to contribute to the prosperity of those countries, people who did that thinking and talking in Russian deserve respect. Their rights are defended on the international level, but not in the country. We call upon international structures and relevant bodies to provide an evaluation of the situation in the field of human rights of journalists, and mass media. By the way, tomorrow we celebrate the World Day of Radio, the World Radio Day, proclaimed by the UNESCO General Conference in 2011 as anniversary of the day when the United Nations made its first broadcast in 1946. This year, the theme of this memorable day is radio and diversity. The attention should be focused on pluralism of opinion and fighting discrimination against radio journalists based on their race, social position, age, religion, or gender. And all this I'm telling you after I have just mentioned about radio stations, Sputnik Radio, in the countries of that same space, which includes the UNESCO. How can that be possible? This is a paradox. I would like to especially emphasize that Russian broadcasters, radio broadcasters, are increasingly subject to discrimination and attempts made by the authorities of a number of countries to limit their work by any means available. Another few examples. Ukrainian radio segment, after the adoption in May 2019 of the law on the state language, the Kievan authorities introduced language shares in TV and radio, defining that this share in national regional mass media should be in the Ukrainian language and it should be no less than 90%. State censorship is also applied to the content. How do they define these shares? How do they calculate that? How did they get 90%? Where did it come from? Maybe Ukraine has conducted some kind of consultations with international partners, with NGOs, relevant structures. By the way, we could ask in the UNESCO if this new decision corresponds to modern norms and laws in that field. Politically motivated obstacles hinder the work of Sputnik Radio in the United States. In February, the American firm RIA Global was compelled by the U.S. Justice Department to register as a foreign agent, which complicates its work.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.